With school back in session across the state, many students and parents are on the hunt to find the best deals on new laptops, but choosing one can be hard. There's so many different choices. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Great to have back Jesse LeGrew. He's a technical team lead with the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. We call it DOIT around here. Yeah, which is a cool and appropriate name, as a matter of fact, do it, because they really do help us do it. He focuses on desktop a bit, laptop security projects. You can find him on campus consulting on IT projects, and he helps faculty and staff resolve computer problems or sometimes repair infected computers. So we can deal with those kinds of things as well. But Jesse, great to have you back today.
Great to be here.
With school going now, laptops are certainly a popular item. I know in my household, my daughter's in 7th grade this year, and most of their assignments are being done. I mean, there are computers at school that they can use, but rather than bring that computer home, which she could do, you know, let's have something at home so we don't break the school's computers. But as you look at what, when you're thinking about a laptop, and maybe is the laptop what you should be thinking about, but what are some of the most important factors to consider?
And really the most important is, just like anything you might buy, whether it's a computer or even a car, what are you going to use it for, mm-hmm. what do you need it for? Somebody who's doing graphic design will have different needs than someone who simply just wants to write papers, send email, and check correspondence for classes. So first thing is really to find out, you know, what might you need to do with this computer in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years. Normally, you know, people will rotate out a new computer within 3 to 5 years. Some people might keep it for a decade. So it really depends on what you're looking for. And then there's always the, you know, the very popular Mac versus PC debacle. Which one do I go with? And it really does depend on what you're going to be using. There are benefits to either platform. It just depends on your day-to-day needs. Does it serve your purposes? The same thing with tablets or even the new Apple iPad Pro.
And one of the things that I always think about is battery life, how long the stupid thing will run on a, and some of them are getting to be pretty good now. They've got pretty good. What should you expect in battery life?
That also partially depends on, I would say, anywhere between 4 to 8 hours. 8 hours is definitely on the high end, but it also depends on what you're doing with it. So if you're a graphic designer, you're compiling something that's using a lot of resources, it's going to suck the battery much, much faster. You can get extended battery packs depending on the model of laptop that you have. It just depends, you know, what are you going to be doing with it? If you are just surfing the web, you're going to get a lot more life out of it than if you're, you know, playing a graphics-intensive or CPU-intensive game, or even anything for normal school work.
Or doing audio or video.
Yep.
As for example, the class I teach, students are doing a lot of audio, recording a lot of audio, and that takes up a lot of space and uses power.
Yep.
And how about screen size? Do you worry too much about screen size? Pretty individual, or?
It's very individual, and part of it, you know, how big do you want your laptop to be? You know, a lot of people are very comfortable with a 12-inch laptop. It works, you know, pretty well, but it might also depend on your eyesight. So maybe you want something a little bit larger so you can get a better indication of how things look. You want a higher resolution screen so you can see more, because maybe you are a graphic designer. You really want to see everything that's there. So getting a larger, a higher resolution screen can give you certain benefits, but, you know, maybe you're hauling around something that's 5 pounds instead of 3 or 2 pounds.
Which is a difference, believe me.
Exactly. So you have to kind of factor everything in, especially when getting a laptop. How often are you going to travel with it? If you're not going to travel with it very often, maybe, you know, do you even need a laptop? Mm-hmm. But also, you know, what you're going to be doing with it, what you want to experience with it. If you're going to take it to a class every day, you probably don't want something very large, because it's going to get in the way. It's going to be more difficult to use than something that's probably smaller.
Definitely. Although I kind of like the larger screens. I have my poor eyes. But there are trade-offs, that's for sure. Would you recommend a laptop with a CD or a DVD drive, typically, as...
Right now, it's kind of difficult to say. A lot of people still use optical media, so CDs or DVDs. Most of the laptops, especially what they call the ultra form factor, the smaller devices, and most, if not all, of the Apple devices right now just don't come with them.
Yeah.
One, to save space, to save weight. It's something that you can much more easily carry around. I haven't really had a need. If people do need them, you can buy inexpensive external drives for fairly cheap. But it's
most of the time you're not going to need one anymore, I wouldn't think. Are there some popular models? Are there some models that are more popular with students, for example, than others?
That is kind of a tough question. I think a lot of people are definitely into, so here we get in a little bit of the Mac versus PC, but also looking at when you want an Apple computer, well, you're getting it from one place, from one vendor, Apple.
Yeah.
Now let's assume you want a PC. Well, which vendor do you want to go with? There's a lot of them. And the price depends on which one you want. Some specialize in other models, but there can also be a very drastic price difference. And I'm not sure what the popularity is right now. I know a lot of people definitely within the last five, even longer years, have been very interested in getting Mac computers. You know, they're stylish. They do most of what you want to do. They also run Windows, so, you know, if you want that flexibility of being able to go back and forth, well, you know, I have Mac OS, but I need to run Windows applications. You can do both. It gives you a little bit more flexibility in that arena. With a PC, if you need a Mac application, well, you need to find somebody with a Mac, go to a lab. But, you know, once again, always depends on what you're going to be doing on a day-to-day basis.
So the cost, well, I was thinking like Acer makes one now, Inspire, or Aspire, isn't it? Aspire. Acer is Aspire. That one's been kind of a popular one.
Mm-hmm. And there are, and I think I'm taking a look at some basic models right now. They can range anywhere from about $300 to $700.
Okay.
The base model for the Acer Aspire is about, you know, $300 to $400. And looking at this one has a little bit larger display. So, for example, I have a, you know, 15-inch laptop. So it's a little bit larger. It's a Mac, but it gives you a little bit better picture of what you're looking at. In this case, this one also has what they state a four-hour battery life. So if you want that extra battery, you might either have to get an additional battery pack, or you might even need to look for a different model. Sometimes the lower the price, there are certain things you're going to get a benefit from. It might just be the lower price, but maybe there is a different processor that actually, while it's a cheaper laptop, requires more power. So then you're sacrificing battery for that price.
And, for price.
And it's a huge balance because you can change just about any component and get not a completely different experience, but, you know, what you're really looking for is so important when trying to decide, one, you know, what model, what manufacturer, and, you know, how large it is. So even an Acer, the one thing I'm always concerned with if I was going to school today, if my laptop breaks, and, well, I know how to fix them, so it helps.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people don't want to rip apart their laptop.
No.
So how do I get it fixed? And I think that would be something I would be concerned with if I'm going to college in another state, another city, or even, you know, the one I'm living in right now. Can I go somewhere and get it repaired, especially under warranty? There are many instances in which you might have to ship it out somewhere. You're going to be without your laptop for 1 to 4 weeks, plus or minus. It could be much greater. And then you're just sitting there. You know, you have to get a loaner, or you have to go to a computer lab. But there are a lot of, you know, Apple's a nice one because there are a lot of service centers and stores around the country. So you have a little bit more options where I know if I go to an Apple store, I'm going to be able to find someone to fix it. UW Madison happens to have an Apple certified service center, so they can do it. And there's probably many others within Madison that can actually service it. Dell's another popular one, but, you know, there's a large range of models, and that service is something that I would be concerned with if my hard drive broke, I cracked my screen. I want to make sure I can get it up and running. So
I've never cracked a screen. Have you?
I've
come close?
I think I've cracked one. I've seen some interesting damage on laptops. Just about anything you can think of can happen. I mean, just like you might leave your coffee mug on the top of your car and then drive away.
Oh, sure.
That can happen with a laptop, and that's happened before. People run it over. Well, people dump coffee on it. That's another common one. Any kind of spill on a laptop is very common, but that's another thing when you're looking for a laptop. Let's assume that you really want that kind of coverage where if I damage it accidentally, I can still get it repaired under warranty. It means you might pay a little bit of a premium up front, but if something does happen where, you know, it wasn't planned and, you know, these physical damage scenarios, which normally aren't covered under standard warranties, that's another thing to factor in. Can I get that kind of warranty? Because that's a kind of safe peace of mind I want. And Dell has that. I'm sure other manufacturers do. Apple does. I think it's just called AppleCare Plus.
Yeah.
You can get it for iPhones. And I think you can also get it for the laptop models. But, you know, just another thing to consider. If you're lugging a laptop around every day, you kind of increase the chance that
something's going to happen sooner or later. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, he's a technical team lead with University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, talking about, well, so far we've been talking about choosing the right computer or the right laptop, and we can certainly expand that to talk other areas of computer care and purchase as well. So you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page, and you can post a question or a comment there. I had an email question from Buster in Roxbury, who says, I was under the assumption that Chromebooks use applications stored on some cloud and not on the limited memory of the laptop. If we don't want to be wasting our limited bandwidth by running applications stored on the cloud, especially when our satellite service is prone to problems with the weather, is it possible to use a Chromebook with downloaded apps that stay on the laptop for word processing or games or drawing, art, that sort of thing?
And this might actually depend on the version of Chromebook. They've been around for, you know, a few years, and they're always evolving. The nice thing about Chromebooks is they're actually very low price.
Yeah.
So it gives you something where you can work, and you don't have to spend $1,000 on a laptop. I'm actually trying to take a look here. There are some limited items that you can use offline, but storage with a lot of the normal day-to-day items is still online. It's in the cloud. If you do want to make sure that you can actually use your Chromebook offline, you might have to change application-specific settings. So by default, it's going to store everything in, you know, the Google Cloud. So you're going to be using Google Docs and you're creating a document. By default, it's going out somewhere else. But you can modify the applications to do offline editing. But it is app-specific. There's actually a great article. It's ZDNet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just look for what Chromebooks can do offline, it describes, you know, and not great detail, but at least gives you an idea of specific programs that can do work offline, how you can save those files, how to get those back into the cloud after you've used them. But with, you know, the smaller form factor and not less capability, but less really built in, which makes it
right
a lot cheaper, there are some trade-offs.
And that's what my daughter in her school, that's what they're using is Chromebooks. And they work pretty darn well, actually, for her needs anyway, for the needs. And I noticed, too, that there are ways that the school itself can protect from students downloading things that they shouldn't be or going places where they shouldn't be going. There are ways to deal with that, I guess.
Yep. And with the Chromebooks, too, a lot of these, and, you know, I'd have to look at all the models, but most of them do have an SD card slot. So it's something that you could use in many phones or in many cameras. If you do have an SD slot in that device and you don't already have an SD card, you can purchase one to install, which allows you to store offline, meaning that you can, you know, download documents,
yes,
work on them, save them, and then at a later point you can move them to Google Drive or wherever else you might need to work on it.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, as we talk computers here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, taking a look at computers and choosing the right laptop, among other things, with our guest, Jesse LeGrew of the Division of Information Technology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have him along. Thanks for listening in. We'll take some calls right now. Janice in Grafton up first. Janice, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. We have a problem with the printer. We took it in and had the problem resolved, and he did a test and was able to print things from his computer at the store, brought it home, hooked it up, and then to our computer, and it refused to print.
You know, I've heard that that scenario more than once on this program. Jesse, what's going on? Maybe.
So there could be a couple of things with the printer. Do you know how old your printer is?
Maybe 5-6 years old, but the computer's even older than that, so that might be a...
That could be an issue.
The problem is.
Did the... I'm guessing the printer did function at some point using your existing computer.
Yes, it did. And then things got jammed, and so then we had that undone, and then took it in and brought it home, and now it hasn't printed since.
Okay, and are you using a PC or a Mac?
It's an Windows XP.
Okay, and since it is a newer printer, I'm assuming it's using a USB cable to plug between the printer and the computer.
I think so.
Okay, mm-hmm. The other one, it would be a lot more noticeable. It's much larger. It'd be about 1 or 2 inches wide to plug it into your computer, so most likely it is a USB cable. Do you know if the USB cable, when you brought it in to have them take a look at it, did you take your USB cable with the printer for them to test it?
I think so, but I'm not real sure. But.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. So I have a few theories and a few other different items you can check. The first thing when dealing with any kind of device that you're plugging in with your computer is always check the connections. So first, if you know you might have other devices that also use a USB cable, one of the first things I would try to do is actually to use a different one. You might get it with a scanner, a different printer. The cables themselves are inexpensive, but it could be a cable issue. Most likely the printer itself works because they were able to test it in the service center. The other possibility is the actual USB port. So the location that on your computer that it's plugged into might be having an issue. One way to test whether that port itself is working, most likely your printer, or not your printer, your keyboard or mouse is using a similar plug. You can actually plug it into that same port to see if your keyboard or mouse still works. If those still work, you know it's not the port. It may still be the cable, but it's at least a different way you can use a different device to test if there's a physical issue with your computer itself.
You know, I had, this is a few months back, I'm telling a story on myself here. I was having problems with the printer, and so I get our IT person to come in and take a look at it. He says, let me see here. He turns it off, and then he turns it back on, and then it works. And I, you know, you feel, why didn't I think of that? But sometimes the simplest solution is the right one.
Yep.
And I don't know if, you know, Janice would have turned it off and turned it back on again, but maybe not.
Yeah, the only other thing on Windows XP or even really any Windows operating system is to go to devices and printers because it'll show what printers you have installed.
Yeah.
It'll show if it's online or offline there. Mm. If it shows nothing at all, it just means it's probably not installed and you may need to either download or find the CD that it came with to install the necessary software. But the first thing I would check is the cables. Make sure the cables work and make sure that the port on the back of your computer or the front, I guess, works.
There you go. Thank you, Janice, and good luck. Appreciate your call. I want to give Bill and Eau Claire a chance to join in. Bill, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you. I just bought a laptop just as an entertainment computer in addition to my other computers, and the message kept coming up to say upgrade to Windows 10. So since it was a new computer and I didn't have much on it, I thought I'd try it. And nothing worked after that. And, the whole reason I bought the computer was just totally destroyed. And so I got on the internet and looked for a way to get back to the 8.1, Windows 8.1 that came with it. And I found real easy instructions. You just go to Settings, Upgrade and Security, and then Recovery. And then it just took a couple hours, and it's back to where it was, and it's fine. So people who upgrade to Windows 10, if they wonder if they should do it or if they've done it and they have problems, if you don't wait too long, you can real easily get back to your previous operating system.
Oh, well, a good tip there. And Jesse, you're nodding in affirmative here.
Yeah, it's great to know, especially where the recovery procedures are, and that it actually, you know, it doesn't work every time. Sometimes
sure.
things mess up, but it's good to know you can always go back. And when you know you have an issue, to go back as soon as possible is a good idea. But one thing I always tell people, always back up your machine. So let's assume that rollback didn't work and things were still broken. It's always good to make sure I have a backup. If I need to, I can start from scratch.
And Windows 10 itself, just do you have a comment, an aside with it? Are you happy with how it works typically? Or?
I actually know a few people who are using it right now. They're happy overall. One thing they brought back, Start Menu, and a few other things that people enjoyed. But, you know, once again, it always depends on your needs. If you have software that doesn't run on Windows 10, well, you probably don't want to get there yet. But that's common with any new operating system. You're never quite sure if all the programs you use are going to function.
And thanks again for that suggestion, Bill. Appreciate it very much. Paul in West Bend, your turn next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. Mine is a privacy issue. When you're using the array of services that Google offers, and you go to one of their apps, and you have to go into their off-site system, so you can't download that software. Is Google scanning everything, all the activities you do, and pumping it into your cache with your name on it, where they're then running algorithms to further enhance, say, your profile of who you are and what they can peddle this to the different retailers of the world?
And there's been, I think, a lot of concern with this over the last several years, even probably longer than that, because you'll notice, and this is, I think, the same, not just with Google, but with anything you do. If you notice that you're browsing the web on one location, you happen to hop to a different web page, and you're getting an ad that looks strangely familiar from something you checked out on Amazon or even on Google, you know, a lot of the web browsers will transfer information back and forth and share a lot of that info to give you tailored ads and other tailored information. Now, as far as Google themselves, regardless of whether it's Google or a different service, it's something we hate to do and probably never do. Maybe there's a very, very small percentage of people who actually take a look at it, is the end user license agreement. So when you're agreeing, like, I'm going to use a service, what people call the EULA, know what it states in there. Now, it might be very difficult to understand it. A lot of it's legalese, and some of it can be quite lengthy. Generally, they're, you know, shouldn't be sharing with your information to any other vendors or services, but the best thing to do is to read the EULA. One, because it should have that information in there, but it also may change over time. Every now and again, if you do, for example, download a new version of iTunes, you'll get prompted, hey, by the way, I just want to let you know some information, hit agree. Most people scroll down, hit agree right away. That message may have been different than the previous version you got 6 months ago. So that information is always being updated, and it's always a really good idea to review it, or even just do some research online to find out, does anyone have any, you know, different updates from this latest version?
Good points. Very good points. Bill in Elm Grove, next with a question. Bill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good. Thank you. Listen, we have a Dell 1700. It's about 8 years old. It's a large-size laptop, and we need to get a suggestion on a replacement. We don't mind the large size because we keep it at home, and it's more or less a substitute for a PC. Mm-hmm. So is there something you would recommend?
And do you know if you were looking to get kind of the exact same size, or would you be comfortable with something maybe even bigger or smaller?
Well, we like the large keyboard, put it that way, you know, full-size keyboard. So
okay.
Something about like the Dell 1700.
Okay, and does your keyboard also have the number pad on it as well?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you like Dell?
Well, that's what we're asking. I mean, we've been quite satisfied with Dell, but if you have some other suggestions, that's fine.
And personally, I like Dell, and there are a lot of other great vendors out there. I do like Dell because they do have great service. If it does work for you and has worked for you in the past, you know, I'd be inclined to probably get a laptop from the same vendor, as long as you were comfortable with their service and what you got out of the hardware that you bought. As far as a specific replacement laptop, do you normally just do basic word processing and email on the computer? Is there anything that you would like to do that you couldn't do with your old laptop?
I'll let you, my wife talk to you about that. Anything else for us?
No, that's basically
it. That's basically it. Okay.
So,
I
think in this case, you could either get any of the 15 or 17-inch Dells. They have a lot of different models. The home brand is called the Inspiron, and they are fairly inexpensive. You can get them starting at about $400, and you can go up
Boy,
and up.
Boy, that's cheap.
Yep, and you can go up and up depending on, you know, exactly what you want to do. In this case, whatever you get is most likely going to be faster than what you have now, but it always depends. You know, it might be a change. So let's say you're running Windows XP now, which is possible. It may come with Windows 8.1 or it may come with Windows 10. So that would be just a different factor I'd take a look at to see if it's a change that would be a little bit easier for you. And I would actually go to even a store that just has models on display. Best Buy and a lot of stores do sell Dell or other models, but I would recommend actually physically going and looking at the laptop so you can touch it, see what it looks like, and, you know, just make sure that it's right for you.
Yeah, that's, I think, very good advice to go straight to the store and try it out.
Oh, with Apple.
So, you know, the other option, of course, is to go with an Apple. You're going to be spending more money there.
Yeah, and if you do go with an Apple, so they have kind of two main lines. One is, you know, the MacBook Pro or the MacBook Air. So the MacBook Air is much thinner and lighter. And the MacBook Pro is, in this case, the MacBook Pro that you'd get now is probably going to be lighter than the model that, you know, you have now, if it's the Inspiron 1700. But it will also be a little bit more expensive. So rather than getting a laptop for about $400, which is a very starter model, the hardware that they put in the specifications for the Apples are usually a little bit higher. So you can consider it a medium to high range laptop. And those will run, you know, probably $1,000 and up. Right now, if they do have, the one thing I'd always take a look at too, whenever Apple releases new models, they generally drop the prices on their old models, meaning it's a really good time to pick up one of those models that they just want to get off the shelves. So they'll take $100 or $200 off those laptops, and you can get those. And I think right now those the screen is 15 inches or 15.4 inches maximum, which should be a very good size. I like that size for my laptop, but it will cost a little bit more money. And the service by default, I think, is a one-year warranty. Apple can come with 1, 3, or 4 years. It just depends on where you're purchasing it from, but it will be a little bit more money. Both will serve basic functions. In this case, it's going to depend on probably the service, how much you're willing to spend, and if there's any special needs you might want to use it for.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look in the Elm Grove area if you've got an Apple store nearby. That's another thing. If you had an Apple store nearby, that'd be another thing to do, would be to go and try one out and just see if you like how it operates. Our house has got all Apple products, you know, so it's every and quite a few, to be perfectly honest, more than probably we should have, but we like those. And but I can certainly see when you're talking about $400 for a non-Apple product, that's probably going to serve as well.
Yep, and the, you know, the 400 is, once again, kind of that bare minimum.
I would really look a little higher than that, to be perfectly honest.
You can easily beef it up. The one thing is, I don't believe any of the Apple laptops right now have the full-size number pad. A lot of people really like the full-size number pad in the laptop. If that really is a deal-breaker, you know, either look for something else, or you can also get external number pads.
Yeah.
People who do a lot with numbers and a lot of finance and everything else, they might like that for a specific reason. But that could be a factor if it's not built into the laptop.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling in, Bill, and good luck. Appreciate your call. But get to the store, or I'd say go to both stores. I mean, I'd go and try out the Dell, but I'd go to an Apple store. If you're interested, it's really worth it to go and look and try it out. It really helps.
Yep, and Best Buy does have Apple and PC, so it's a good store to kind of get an idea of both. If you do lean one way or the other with a specific vendor, you might need to go somewhere else, but at least you get kind of a very good general idea of what's out there.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Got a Facebook question from Barbara. Can you talk about tablets and what some of the different options there are in terms of size and other features if you're looking to buy a tablet?
So there are a lot of tablets out there.
You know, somebody might say, what the heck is a tablet? So maybe define that.
So, and I think the definition of a tablet's changing and people look at it a different way. A tablet is usually it's kind of a large phone, the way I look at it. You can do basic functions with it, and you can surf the web. You can play games. You can download apps. But do very basic items. And tablets will come in kind of a range of maybe a 7-inch screen to even up to even 11 or 12-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the tablets that are out there, you know, we have Windows tablets, we have Apple tablets, we have Android tablets. A lot of them do similar things. They have a wide variety in price and a wide variety in what they can do. You can get the bare minimum, and I don't want to say bare minimum as far as it does far less, but a lot of the, for example, the Kindle, they have a nice size screen. You can use a lot of the applications. You can do video streaming with Hulu or Netflix, and they're actually pretty inexpensive. You can get one of those and do a lot of the things you'd like to do on a daily basis very easily. You want to look at the other spectrum, you can get a Surface Pro. And I think the Surface Pro 4 is coming out soon, but that's a fully functioning laptop in the form of a tablet. So it might be a little bit bigger, could be a little bit smaller, but it's a full version of Windows, meaning that you can do everything you'd like to do with your desktop or laptop on that tablet. So it's kind of bridging that gap between, all right, what is a tablet, and then what's my desktop or laptop computer? And then you have everything in between. Which
on that end, though, what does that cost? What's the cost on that, roughly?
I think the Surface is about $900+. And actually, I think they have a few others that are a little bit cheaper. So they have the Surface and the Surface Pro. The Surface Pro is a full-functioning version of Windows, which allows you to do more things. You can install Firefox, and you can install a game. You can plug in external displays and external peripherals. It really can act as a standalone computer. The basic Surface is about $500, but these can actually get up to, I believe, around $2,000.
Wow. There we go. So the tablets are, there's so many different options, but are, in general, are they all pretty good? I mean, the...
It once again, just like a laptop, depends on what you need. If you want to browse the web, check Facebook, send some email, I think just about every tablet out there is going to be able to serve
do
your
that.
Needs. The very base Kindle, which isn't like the Kindle Fire, where you can, you know, read books, the capabilities really aren't there. It's not meant to be a tablet. But the other tablets that are out there, you do have a lot of options, and they will serve your needs. But if your need is, you know, well, I want to plug in a secondary display and play a nice game and do a little bit more with it, you know, you might be looking to, you know, kind of that crossover between a tablet and that fully functioning device, but you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, there we go. Talking today with Jesse LeGrew, a technical team leader with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We had did have an email comment from Carl. We forgot the third option. Linux is what Carl uses exclusively. The software is free. It also runs Windows apps. You do not need to be a computer expert to use it. And what do you think?
And there are, and I know Dell did ship with some. I'm not sure about the other vendors. They may come with a free or nominal cost version of Linux. And there are what they call flavors of Linux. So the various versions you can get, which there are hundreds. Some are more user-friendly than others. But the popular ones out there that are very well-developed can work very well for end users. If you're used to, you know, a PC or a Mac, they can work similarly. Once again, it really depends on what you're going to be doing with it, and some things might be easier to do than others, but that's the case, but even between Mac and PC.
Sure.
So Linux can work very well. It just depends on, and Linux will run on, you know, a standard Dell computer or whatever else you might buy from any different vendor like Asus or Acer.
There you go. And Diana, New Auburn, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Hi.
Hi. I have a problem with Windows 10 in receiving a critical error message that says Cortana and the start menu are not functioning. Log out and try again and we'll fix it. Well, that has never worked. And I know other people are having this same problem because I did a little bit of research online about it, but I don't know quite what to do with it. I never know if I'm going to have a functioning laptop or not. I have tried rebooting, and that seems to bring it all back, but, I mean, it's extremely annoying.
Yeah.
And so did you previously have Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 on your computer and then upgraded?
I had Windows 8.1, and I upgraded to Windows 10, and I wish I wouldn't have done it.
Do you know how long ago it was that you upgraded?
Probably about 6 weeks.
Okay. One option, which I, you know, somebody actually called in earlier about this, which is you can actually restore or recover your computer back to Windows 8.1, meaning that it could be back to exactly what you had before with everything functioning the way it did. One item before doing that would be to actually back up anything on your computer just to make sure that nothing unforeseen happened. Such as it deleting files, which shouldn't happen, but I like to be safe. So that's one option. Another option, and I'm trying to browse through a lot of different items here because it does seem like this is a very, very common issue.
Get a lot of chat activity on that one.
Yeah, and as far as one, so normally for these kind of items, there will most likely be some kind of, since it is so widespread, I would guess at some point there is going to be
a fix
for it. So there's going to be a patch most likely at some point in the future that's going to resolve it. Granted, it's already been, you know, about 6 weeks since dealing with this.
Should be a patch by this time.
Yeah, and patches are released. In this case, the last patch cycle was 2 days ago. So if it didn't come now, it may come within the next month. And who knows, it may not. It just depends on what the exact error is. The one item that, or one thing that helped with somebody else was trying to go to safe mode and then restarting your computer. Safe mode is something that allows you to kind of strip down Windows so you're only running the bare minimum. It may reset a few things and allows you to restart your computer into normal mode. When before Windows is booting up, you'll normally see a splash screen if you're using a Dell or an Acer. You can type the F8 key, and it'll give you a list of options. One of those is to run safe mode, but they also usually do have a repair option, which might allow you to repair Windows and hopefully get back to the point where it's functioning. But if it is increasingly problematic, I would probably consider restoring back to Windows 8.1 from the security and settings options within Windows 10, or trying to do some of the repair options that they have online. The downside is none of these really seem to be
working.
not necessarily working, but consistent. And some of them can be a little bit complicated. And it could be indicative that there was an actual issue even before you upgraded, or it could be that, you know, it didn't properly, it wouldn't properly work on your specific model. One thing I'd look up is any errors pertaining to that specifically for your model number, whether it's a Dell, a Toshiba, or any laptop. It could just be, well, it turns out that when you have this specific software for this specific model, this happens, which does happen from time to time, and it's unfortunate when they do happen. But I would honestly just consider backup your computer with the built-in tools, or even using some other tools that are out there. And I would actually just consider rolling back and see if things are consistent.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Diane. Appreciate your call. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, as we take a look at choosing the right laptop and making repairs and fixing what goes wrong with the software. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at your computer today with Jesse LeGrew, who is with the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. He does obviously all kinds of work in many areas. He talks about, deals with desktops and laptops, security projects, among other things. He consults on IT projects and helps faculty like myself and staff resolve computer problems. So, lots of callers. Every line is full at 800-642-1234, and plenty of emails and Facebook questions as well. So let's go right back to the phones and to John in Green Bay next. John, hi.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Hi. I've got an HP laptop that's 6 years old, and I've started to have some issues on the keyboard where if I'm trying to... If I try to put in the numbers 1 through 0, the number 5 won't print, the number 6 won't print, except on the right-hand side where you've got the numbers, 5 does print, but the 4 doesn't print. So I'm not asking to fix that because with a 6-year-old, I'm being advised, well, maybe it's time not to spend money in trying to get a new keyboard or whatever, but to buy a new computer. So my question is, I've had Windows. I've got Windows 7 on this one. And, I've gotten along fine with Windows. But my question is there an advantage from me switching from Windows over to an Apple, for example?
I don't know if there'd be a particular advantage to it. The hardware is actually very similar. It really depends on kind of what you're going to be using it for on a daily basis. You might have a learning curve when moving from Windows to Mac OS. So
right.
Things might work a little bit differently. It'll be a little bit different to get to certain things such as Microsoft Word or your email. So that's part of it. But, I mean, if you do basic things, email, web browsing, it'll work
right.
Fine.
Yeah, that's what I do. The other question would be, is there, and the store that I go to, they have refurbished laptops, an HP. Is there, and they say, well, it only comes with a 90-day warranty. What is your opinion on buying a refurbished laptop?
It kind of depends on the cost of the refurbished laptop, I guess, because you're always taking a risk whether it does, you know, something breaks at day 91. If the laptop is fairly inexpensive, that risk feels a little bit smaller. If you spend $1,000 on it, I would probably still consider buying a new device that actually does have a full 1 to 4 year warranty.
Right. Are you confident of HP Hewlett Packard's?
All computers are, you know, very similar. Some are manufactured in the same areas, too. I know a lot of people who have had HPs, and, you know, they love them. Regardless of the manufacturer, whether it's Dell, Lenovo, Apple, things break.
Yeah.
It's hard to get around that fact. And sometimes people just have bad luck. I've known a lot of people who've gotten laptop after laptop or desktop, and they seem to have a lot of problems, and it has nothing to do with them. It was just a device I happened to get at the time or something else that happened. Years ago, there was a large manufacturing bug where capacitors were exploding computers. That happened to everyone, not just Apple, Dell, and a lot of the big names. So you're running a lot of the similar risks. One thing, especially with a keyboard malfunction, regardless of, you know, it would be potentially inexpensive to fix it. The keyboards could be between $10 and $50, and you might even be able to install it yourself. So it's something to always look into. But as far as moving from Windows to Mac, there's a different change of experience. But the Apple Store and a lot of the Genius Bar, they can help you to transfer files and settings from that device to your new one.
Mm-hmm. Do you have iPhones, or do you have?
My wife has an iPhone.
I don't know if that would make any difference. Probably.
It wouldn't make, I don't think in this case, too much of a difference.
No.
The iTunes software is just as good on PC and a Mac, especially when doing backups and restores.
Yeah.
But there are some benefits if you do have some cross-compatible apps where you can run, you know, an iPad version on your actual Mac, et cetera. They have the same thing between iPads and iPhones. But I think that functionality probably wouldn't change too much. The integration with the calendar and the contacts applications in macOS might make it a little bit more friendly, where if you have all your contacts in your phone, you plug it into your Mac, and boom, they're all on
your
Mac.
They're all there.
And, you know, they're in a nice place for you to use it, but then you're still learning a different program. So if you use Outlook or Thunderbird, which you can still use Outlook or Thunderbird on the Mac, but the built-in mail application is going to be a little bit different. There might be a few learning curves. But for basic needs, I really just state, you know, if it works for you, it works for you. So whether it's a PC, a Mac, or even in this case, if it's Linux,
mm-hmm.
as long as it works and you're comfortable using it, use it.
Yep.
Well, one quick last question. My son keeps telling me, get rid of your HP laptop and get a Chromebook.
And for basic web browsing and basic email, it will work fine. They're also very inexpensive. If you did ever desire or wanted to do kind of higher level things, which is I want to create a slideshow with these pictures or videos, you might have limited capability there. But if you're only concerned with I want to browse the web, I want to check email, and do a few other simple items, it might be a good choice.
What about size of screen?
Size of screen, I think the Chromebooks are around 10 inches, but it's been a while since I've actually used one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. That's one thing that would, especially if your eyes, if your eyesight isn't all that great, you might want to go a little bigger.
Yeah, and they do have, I mean, the Chromebooks now, they have quite a few upgrades from when we saw them originally years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They actually do kind of look like Macs. They're silver and do kind of have the same style. But they have a lot of options out there, and I think the one I saw was about 12 inches, which actually is a pretty good size.
Yeah, 12 isn't bad. There we go. Thank you so much for that call. It was another great call. Dan in Michigan, your turn. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to get back a little bit on the subject of tablets and point out something. When people are looking for a tablet that they should really look into, depending on if they want to use their tablet, say, over the road and whatnot, or if they're just looking to connect to a Wi-Fi signal, there are some tablets that don't connect to your cell phone plan and can't be used over the road. They can only connect to Wi-Fi signal. I just wanted to make that point so people are aware of that when they're looking for one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That is a very good point. And especially if you do want to use your data plan from your cell phone provider, a lot of times, a lot of them are throwing deals out there left and right. Here, get this, and it'll be cheap or free, and we'll add the service, and you can use your data plan. Biggest thing when getting any kind of tablet, if you require it to work kind of without a general internet connection outside of your cell service, is just make sure you have the right device for the right service, because some devices may only work for Sprint or for US Cellular.
Oh,
so you have to be
sure.
very careful about what you're buying and what you can use it for. So always going to your cell provider is probably going to be one of the best options, because they should at least be able to generate some kind of list for you. But that is a great point.
Thank you very much for that call. And is there a place online that does a good job of sort of like consumer reports type for laptops and, you know, tablets?
And I would actually say Consumer Reports. So that's one of
okay.
them. They do take a look at a lot of devices, including electronic and tablets. ZDNet. It depends on how you want to kind of navigate your news stories. Reddit can also be pretty good if you want to look at newer technologies. There's a ton out there, but it always depends on kind of what you're looking for. As soon as you understand, I want a 10-inch tablet that works on Sprint and also Wi-Fi, and it's Android. Mm-hmm. Well, all of a sudden, you've narrowed down your options. So I would just focus on, all right, here's my myriad of options, and kind of narrow down what you want to go with, and it'll help you get to that point where you know what you want to compare, and it'll make things a lot easier.
Talking today with Jesse LeGrew of the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, and he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. Still take your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'll be back right after this look at the news. You stay with us. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Miller here. Sometimes technology gets a bad rap, like so many things. When it's working well, you really don't notice it. But when it isn't, boy, do you ever notice it. And one of the guys that comes to your aid, or may come to your aid when you have a problem, is Jesse LeGrew. He's a technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. On campus, you find him consulting on IT projects, helping faculty and staff resolve computer issues, all kinds of things. And Jesse, thanks again for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And, you know, guess what? We have all kinds of questions from people. Facebook question from Sally wonders, why would you please explain the purpose of Wi-Fi boosters or extenders and when you might actually need one? I had difficulty installing a wireless printer, and I wonder if that might be a possible fix.
And normally a wireless booster, they might call repeaters. Basically what they're meant to do is kind of extend your wireless network beyond, you know, a certain area, or in certain cases where you might have a lot of metal or shielding between floors or rooms to try and get beyond that. Now, if you have a printer that you're having issues hook up, but you're able to use a laptop or a tablet fine on wireless in that location, it's probably not going to help you because it means that the wireless signal is probably strong enough. You're able to navigate the general internet, and those things work. Now, that's assuming you have a different wireless device that you can test with. If you don't have that, I would just recommend bringing the printer as close, physically as close to your wireless device as possible. If it still has the same issues there, the repeater or the extender is not going to help. It's most likely something specific, a configuration with a printer or something else. But if you do, a lot of people use extenders because they have a larger house. They want to make sure they can get to both sides of the house and into the backyard. People use additional wireless access points, repeaters, or extenders to do that. In this case, it may or may not help you, but at least try to bring the printer closer to the device to test that, and also try a different device near your printer to see if that functions. It'll at least mm-hmm. help you narrow down whether it's a wireless issue or not.
So let's say you've got the main unit in your basement. Would you then, with an extender, just say, okay, we'll put this up on first floor? How do those hook up?
And it depends, actually, on the wireless device you use. So if you use, for example, an AirPort Extreme from Apple, you have to use the Apple-specific software to make sure, hey, this is a device I'm extending this network with. And it goes through a process, usually on a Mac computer, to do that. If you have a Linksys device, it's going to be completely different. Generally, they're going to have instructions with the device itself on how to set that up, or you can call, you know, their number, or even look online, because a lot of people have done this, to find out the best instructions for your device. But since there are so many different devices, there's not one great way to do it.
Unfortunately. I wish there were. Darlene in Viroqua, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a problem with my printer. I don't know what happened to it, but all of a sudden, it is printing by itself the same thing over and over. What it prints out, it's a framing forbidden, and there's an X with a circle around it, and this content cannot be displayed in a frame. And then it goes on to explain a little bit why. But even if I can get it to print something off my computer, it will then go back to printing these sheets with this on it, and I can go after sheet after sheet. Any ideas?
Are you at home? Do you only have one computer or many computers that use
it? Oh, we have two.
Okay. And can both of them print to that printer?
No, just this one.
Okay. And I'm guessing you have the printer physically plugged in to that
computer.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. There are a couple things that I would take a look at first.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, you know, if you have everything plugged in and turned on right now and the printer is not printing anything, it means it's not kind of waiting for data. If you look at, I'm guessing, do you have a PC?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can go to either printers or devices and printers, and mm-hmm. When you right-click on your computer, it usually has an option to show the jobs or show what's printing. If that shows up blank, that's another good sign. Sometimes a print job will get stuck, and basically there's a little bit of garbage behind there, and it keeps spewing out all of these pages of random text.
Mm-hmm.
That's one possibility. If you do see something in there, delete all the print jobs and just make sure it's completely clean.
This is the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Yep. And okay. the other possibility is it could be a software issue, meaning that the software that's designed to make your computer talk to your printer is having some kind of problem. You can usually download new updated software from your the vendor website who made the printer. What model printer do you have, or what manufacturer? Okay. And Hewlett-Packard has great online software downloads. If you go to the main HP.com website, you can search for your printer model, and it'll show you the software that you can download. I'd actually recommend updating to the very latest version of software, and then try again. If that doesn't work, it may actually be an issue with the printer itself, or still, even possible, the cable.
Hmm. Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And that's happened with my color printer, where it printed the test page 4 or 5 times in a row, which was very highly irritating because it's using up a lot of ink. Those test pages use a lot of ink.
Yep, and one of the more interesting things I've seen is for network printers, which some people have at home, they'll definitely have something like that in the office. Without anyone printing to it, it'll start spewing out weird pages, and it's most likely because somebody's scanning it on the network.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually sending it data that kind of makes it freak out, and it just starts spewing out garbage, and it'll print reams and reams of paper until it's done. Luckily, that was not the case for this
one.
But usually, it just basically got a command it didn't understand, and it freaked out.
Linda in Wausau, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm calling about a problem I have connecting with a certain email address. We have AOL. I've got a Mac desktop.
Okay.
And the other day, when you tried to access this account, a security alert came on. It said, AOL detected suspicious activity. My husband had done this, and he called the number that it said, if you're not sure if it's real or not, this a warning. But he just gave his email address but not his password, then he hung up. But the problem is, we've got two computers. We can't access it at home, this particular email account, but our son in the Twin Cities can access it from his computer without a warning. And I took my desktop to the library yesterday, used their access, and I could get that email account. But I bring it back home, and when we try to access it, the security alert comes on from AOL. Well, supposedly from AOL.
Hmm. Okay. For this one, and I was taking a look a little bit at the security message itself, one thing that AOL does recommend is to actually to call their support team. So I'm unsure, since I haven't used AOL, in actually a while, so I'm sure they've changed many things. But sometimes, and I get this on my Gmail, actually, if I log in with a phone and a different device and another device, I'll actually get a warning, hey, by the way, somebody has your information. They may inadvertently block it, whether it's, you know, a good or a bad type of access, and you may need to contact them or go through an online process so that you can access it.
Well, the thing is, we only get the alert when we try to access it at home. So why could we take that same computer
somewhere else and it works?
Yes.
And the what kind of internet are you using right now?
I have the Frontier Wireless.
Oh.
So it goes through the phone, but, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that depends. So there are a few different ways they can kind of identify your computer. One is the computer itself and things they have stored on it. Another one is the internet service that you use. So if you take it somewhere else and you're most likely going to be using a different internet service, if you don't get the alert there but you do when you're at home, it's most likely triggering something because of your internet service. It's identified you because of what you're using and where. And generally what they call these IP addresses. But they may say, this is a dangerous one. We're not sure about it, and we're going to kind of block it. So that's a different way they can kind of identify you as an address for your computer on the internet. So that's a possibility.
Something to think about. And sorry you're having those problems, Linda. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Jenny and Bayfield a chance to join in. Jenny, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My husband and I have a Mac laptop. It was purchased in 2011, and we've never updated the operating system. About a week ago, it was freezing. It wasn't doing, it was doing things very slowly. So I tried to turn it off from the file menu and restart it. And that froze, and so I couldn't turn it off, so I turned it off manually. And since then, I tried to turn it back on manually, and it just scrolls continually and never goes to the home menu until it basically kind of overheats.
Yeah. That is not good.
So this could be many different things. The first kind of thing that comes to mind would be a hard drive failure. So the computer is basically having trouble reading the information it needs in order to be in order to start up completely. At this point, it probably is not a software issue. It's most likely a hardware issue. And one thing I'd recommend is to either go into an Apple store or a different service center to have diagnostics run on it. There are some diagnostics if you ever purchased AppleCare or a different, a warranty service, you may have even received a diagnostic CD or DVD you can run yourself. So at least you don't have to necessarily go and, if it's not under warranty, pay for somebody to take a look at it, and you can find out yourself. But I would actually recommend to have somebody look at the physical hardware, because I have a feeling that's where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Who is General Failure, and why is he on my hard drive? There we go, Rocky and Nishkoro. Your turn.
Hi. Hi, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I just updated the Windows 10, and I've always known that you got to usually increase your memory, so I went from 2 gigabyte to 4 gigabyte. When I did that, I installed it. Everything seems to be running fine. It's even a little bit faster. But when I look on to system's property, it says I have 2 gigabytes of memory. Is there some way to check to see if it's only recognizing 2? Or
sure. Do you what kind of computer do you have?
A Rocky built one.
Okay. So you built this one yourself?
Yes. It's a gigabyte motherboard with. It has double data or double intertwined or intertwined memory and stuff.
Yep. And so in this case, since you're at least more familiar with the hardware, one thing I'd recommend, and Gigabyte, it depends on the motherboard that you have. One place I check first, just to make sure that Windows is reading it properly, and it probably is to go into the BIOS, which is usually either F1, F2, F12, or delete one of those keys, and it'll give you the system information, including your processor and your memory. If it tells you that you have 2 gigabytes of memory, well, it's not reading it either. It may also indicate which slot. So you're generally going to have anywhere from 2 to 4 to 8 slots where you can put memory in. It might tell you which one is reading 2 or maybe even 1 gigabyte. And it could just be that maybe the memory's loose. The slot itself where you install the memory is bad. But it could give you an indication at least which slot and whether it's reading the information correctly.
Is there any possibility that it might only be capable of handling 2?
And that is another possibility. It definitely depends on the age of the computer. But that's another reason I go into the BIOS, because if it does happen to have information on each slot, and it says, here's slot 1, 2, 3, and 4, slot 1's 2, all the rest are 0, well, if it's in the one of those other slots, it means the memory might be bad, it might not be plugged in all the way, or it's simply not reading it. But you would get different messages depending on, you know, the version of software. And obviously, Gigabyte has a website with all sorts of information and manuals for your memory, and they tell you how much it can handle. So definitely reference that. But first, I look in the BIOS just to see what it's saying, because I think it'll give you a better indication of what's going on.
That's very good tip.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Rocky, for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So last night, or yesterday afternoon, I spilled a glass of water on my computer. What I did was immediately I turned it off. Well, it was in sleep mode, but I took the battery out, and I opened the DVD drawer, and then I put it on its side, and let a fan run on it all day, and all, well, it's still running on the fan back home. But I wondered, did I do everything correctly, or no?
Generally... So taking the battery out, making sure it powered off are always great ideas, because you don't want power running through that computer while components are wet. Generally, even if let's say I had it on a countertop and I spilled water on it, at that point, I might not even really want to move it that much, because the more you move the laptop, obviously the water is going to move with the direction of where your hands are. So it could actually make some of the water, you know, sloosh around in there, which you might not want. But if at least it's off, it's going to be a big help. Normally I wouldn't use a fan, because you're brushing air, and you know, if you do have, depending if it's dry or wet air, how humid it is, you have some possibility for static. Normally what I do is I'd put it into an environment that can dry it out. So if you do, whenever you get new hardware for a computer, whether it's a hard drive, even luggage, they have those weird little silica packets. Those are meant to absorb moisture. So if you're able to put it into a contained space and have that moisture hopefully getting sucked up by that kind of stuff, a lot of people like rice. That's another one.
I was going to say, ask you if that, you hear that all the time.
Yep, and rice does work. And there are a lot of different ways, a lot of different things that can actually suck up moisture. But definitely, you know, don't move it too much. You did the right things about making sure it's off, taking the battery out. Great ideas. And then something else to actually dry out kind of the atmosphere around the laptop. I normally wouldn't use a fan, but anything like silica gel packets, rice. I've also seen some things online where you can put things in your closet. It's kind of like a dehumidifier and it collects water. I guess that would work too. It's generally the same idea to get all the moisture out. And normally when you're doing that, I would not touch it for at least 1 to 3 days. So let it sit there and dry out. It's possible it'll do that even without the rice or anything else, but you might as well just be perfectly safe to ensure that, you know, I'd rather wait an extra day, turn it on and have it work, than do it one day too early and something happens. We usually say about 2 days. It depends how, you know, paranoid you want to be. But generally just make sure it dries out. As long as it's dry, depending on the kind of liquid that was spilled on it, it might be fine. But you don't know until you hit the switch.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Thinking about my phone. This is several years back. I bought a phone, and you know, do you want the insurance? No, I don't want the insurance. I had the phone one day, and then I go to get in my boat, and the phone out of my pocket into the lake one day. Then I went back and paid a lot of money for a new phone that I was very sad that I did not have. Well, that I wasn't careful is what I was. I was sad that I wasn't careful, I guess, the main thing. Well, by the way, Mary wondered, could you suggest a cheap but reliable tablet that would work very basic needs? She saw some starter kids tablets that looked like possibilities. But so I think what we're looking for here is something cheap. She wants to spend as little as possible for a second tablet.
And I'm trying to take a look around here for different tablets. I know the one that a lot of people I know have used is the Kindle Fire. It was actually fairly inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a lot of features and a lot of software you can run on it. If you're looking for something even less expensive...
What was that?
I think it was about... probably around 100 plus or minus. They have the high definition version, which might still be 100 because they've upgraded over the last year or two. But there are a lot of other tablets out there. Common places I normally look for tablets or any kind of devices, I look at Amazon a lot in addition to Newegg. The one reason I actually like Amazon and a lot of other sites is user reviews. So you can look for the specific kind of device you want, sort it by reviews, and actually get an indication how people liked it, what did or what didn't work for them, to help you make your decision. Because you can obviously spend a very little amount of money or a lot. But I have liked the Android devices. They've worked really well. But also, I would look for, you know, let's say you really do like an iPad. A lot of people do sell refurbished iPads. You can actually get one for maybe even under $100. So keeping an eye at different stores that might sell brand new hardware, they might be also selling refurbished.
Very good points. And finally, Charlene wondered, what's the best way to protect a computer from a power surge or a lightning strike? If you've got a lightning strike, there's nothing that's going to... I mean, if it's a direct strike.
Yep. So there's a few things you can do. Surge protectors are really what most people use. They're rated at a certain voltage that it can handle. It doesn't mean it's always going to protect you against everything. The thing that people have always recommended, which, you know, I actually haven't heard in a long time, and I'm sure people don't do, is, hey, if there's a lightning storm or there's a thunderstorm, unplug your stuff.
Unplug it.
And that was the recommendation.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about doing that anytime there's been a thunderstorm. I have power backups that do have additional surge protectors. Those are the traditional method.
Well, Jesse, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. I learned a lot today. I think everybody else did as well. Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
He'll be back, I hope. Jesse LeGrew from the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. We'll talk some more with him about selecting and repairing laptops. Great to have him along. And again, thank you. Molly Fifield-Murray comes by to talk about native plants for Garden Talk. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.